The Outdoorsman Radio Show is brought to you by Ellis Outdoors, LLC. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for the Outdoorsman Radio Show with your host, Alan Ellis. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the second hour of the Outdoorsman Radio Show. The first cup of coffee started to kick in a little bit, so we're ready and rocking and rolling here. We have with us a very important, highly motivated individual here from the Maryland Department of Natural Resources Fisheries Service. Mike Luisi is with us, the director of the Estuarine and Marine Fisheries. Good morning, Mike. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm great. Wow, you got a great radio voice there, Mike.
I've heard that a few times before, but haven't been on the radio too often.
Well, now you are.
This is my big shot.
There you go. Well, that's very cool. Tell me what the director of the Estuarine, how do you say it?
Estuarine and Marine Fisheries Division.
Yep, what do you do?
One unit, it's one part of
right.
Fisheries Service. So my role there is to, I'm basically responsible for fisheries management for the fish and crab resources in all the tidal waters of the state, including the coastal zone. So Chesapeake Bay, coastal bays, ocean waters, so anything that kind of crawls or swims, it falls within the division. I've got a number of different people that work on different programs, under me that, to collect information. They're out in the field. They're pulling everything together
right.
throughout the year, and then they provide me with the information, and me and my, our management team at the department, we make the decisions on, setting up regulations and determining what needs to be, if we need to increase or reduce harvest.
Well, we're talking about
to help the species.
Sure. Well, we're talking about coastal fisheries right now,
We're talking about coastal fisheries,
and it's not just Maryland Department of Natural Resources when it comes to the management of coastal species. I'm going to assume that there's other agencies and other bodies and other states involved in that. You want to tell our listeners just a little bit about how that works? Let's say we're going to talk about summer flounder, which is a very highly desirable species here in Maryland. A lot of people go to Ocean City and watch Prig, Virginia, the Eastern Shore of Virginia, and New Jersey. I mean, people just love to fish for flounder because it's a readily accessible fish that comes inshore. They don't have to necessarily. They can fish off of a pier. They can fish off the Route 50 bridge, and it's a good eating fish. It's offers everything out there, and it's very highly pursued, and it's very highly managed as well. So just take summer flounder and tell us a little bit about who all is involved in the management decisions when it comes to summer flounder.
Yeah, that's great. I think a lot of people they're not quite sure, who's involved. And for a species like flounder that migrate along the Atlantic coast, there are different entities, different management bodies that get involved. So you kind of have to think of it as in terms of, the water body. So there are two different major entities, or three, I guess I could say. The first, if we're talking about state waters, and state waters include all waters of the Chesapeake Bay, all waters of the coastal bays, and then everything in the ocean that goes out to 3 miles. So from the beach to 3 miles out is managed by the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. This is a commission that's made up of all the states, all the coastal states from Maine to Florida. and each state has three representatives on the commission. There is the state director of the Natural Resources Division of their state. There is a governor-appointed member and a legislative member from each state. So for Maryland, right now, there are two of us that are dividing the task of being on as the state director. So Lynn Fegley and I sit on the different boards of the different species. You know, I serve on the silver flounder board. And I have two partners in crime when we're there at those meetings. Bill Goldsboro from the Chesapeake Bay Foundation is the governor's appointed member. And Dana Stein is the legislative member, Delegate Dana Stein.
Let me tell you about Dana. Let me tell you real quick about Dana Stein. Let me tell you real quick about Dana Stein. Let me tell our listeners about Dana Stein. Dana Stein is the co-chairman of the House committee who hears all the legislation that involves both fishing and hunting. And Dana Stein is what we consider in the Maryland Hunting Coalition as a friend. He's been very, very good to the sportsmen in Maryland, and that couldn't have asked for a better delegate to be on the on that committee that you're talking about, Mike.
Just fan mail here from appointed recently, and yeah, he's getting himself as much as he can engaged in the process, and I look forward to working with him.
He's a great guy. Yep, you'll enjoy
that's
it.
The Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission side,
right?
And then as you move offshore, outside of 3 miles. Those waters, which are called the EEZ or the Exclusive Economic Zone, that is managed by the federal government and the National Marine Fisheries Service.
Okay.
So, the National Marine Fisheries Service, they have advisory bodies,
right,
all throughout the country. They're called management councils, and the one that we will, because of our geography in Maryland, we serve on the Mid-Atlantic Fisheries Management Council.
Right. So you got
that management council is made up of representatives from New York to North Carolina,
right?
Fishermen, environmentalists, state directors—you know, people who are involved in the fisheries process—and they meet 6 times a year. And for certain species like flounder, we're the ones that make the recommendations to the National Marine Fisheries Service for how they're going to manage flounder now. The Atlantic, on a species like flounder, which we'll be talking about in a few minutes, it's a joint process because both the Atlantic States Commission and the Mid-Atlantic Council have management plans for flounder. We meet jointly at any chance we can,
right,
to make those decisions and to move things forward, set quotas, decide on regulations, and the council. I've been serving on the council for Maryland for probably 5 years now.
Right.
As Maryland's, state person on the council.
Right. Okay. So we've got the governing bodies, and there's a lot of moving parts there, and a lot of folks. Yeah. Got it. So you're looking at summer flounder. Let's just drill right down to it here. Summer flounder aren't. For 2016, the regulations are not going to be as liberal as they are this year, correct?
That's correct, yeah. People are going to have to, it's the first time in a while, but people are going to have to, we're going to have to cut back a little bit on flounder catch.
Okay, explain.
It was a little bit of a shock, to be honest with you. I got a phone call from the executive director of the council, because I serve as the chairman of the flounder, the demersal committee, or the committee that oversees flounder for the council. And so he called me back a couple weeks ago and wanted to give me an update on the most recent stock assessment. So what a stock assessment is the scientists get together, they pull all the data and all the information from all the states and all the governing bodies together, and they try to do the best they can to predict or, I guess, evaluate the health of the population.
Right.
And for many, many years, flounder have been thriving and growing, and the stock is getting larger and larger and larger in the ocean. And that was a great thing. That was what we were hoping for. And as that was happening, we found ourselves having the opportunity to liberalize our rules. We went from, I think maybe, I'm not great with years, but 5-8 years ago, we had almost a 19-inch fish in the coastal bays.
Right.
And we slowly, little over time, as this population expanded and grew, we over time got ourselves down to a reasonable fish of 16-inch fish in Maryland now. With a year-round season. I think it's a 4-fish bag limit.
Right.
You know, and anglers were happy, and they had what they wanted. They sacrificed through those regulations.
Yep.
With the larger size limits to allow for that population to expand.
Yep.
And that was a great thing. And right now, we, you know, given the recent assessment, what the assessment's telling us is that stock isn't doing as great as we had hoped.
Right.
My first reaction was, well, whose fault is it? what other state? It has to be somewhere else in the country. That there's got to be another Mid-Atlantic state that's causing this.
Right.
And we can figure out how to back out of it and not be part of it. But that's not really the case. And so what's happened is that there's been a few years, almost 3 or 4 years, over the last 3 or 4 years, recruitment has been very low. And recruitment is
reproduction and survival of little babies. Yeah, of course, little baby founder. Right.
So if you have a large adult population and they're, for whatever reason, mostly environmentally driven, aren't making lots of little babies, well, you're going to have a period of time when the population and the health of the population becomes condensed or becomes smaller.
Right. So in other words, if the breeding's not there, the successful breeding and recruitment is not there, then down the road when those fish are catchable size, there's not going to be enough of them. And so now it's time for new numbers, new assessment, new regulations when it comes to recreational angler to ensure the sustainability of the species.
Right, and it's, you know, both recreational and commercial fishermen are going to be impacted by some of these reductions. And the hard thing for anglers is that they're seeing a large number of fish, right? The adult population is healthy, it's strong, but when you look behind it, when there's nothing coming.
Nothing coming.
There's nothing. There are weaker year classes coming through. So we have to do something now into the future to protect those that are coming through in order to have that sustainable population, as you mentioned.
Right. So did you ask the question, you know, who's responsible for it and what's going on? What was the answer to that question when you ask it?
Well, nobody's also, what I've been telling people that have asked, I think this is just trying to manage nature is what this is. We're doing the best we can as managers, given the information that we have.
I give credit where credit is due, Mike. And I mean, the biologists, the people that are out there doing the work and doing the field research, you know, they can't change what is. You know, they can only assess what is and do the work to get the best numbers that they possibly can. 20 some years ago, I said on this program, almost probably 25 now, you know, hey, you know, there's areas of the bay where you can catch fish, but you may not catch a fish in the spot where you were yesterday. And the reason is fish swim.
Right.
You know, it boils down to that, fish swim. And for you guys to try and figure out, it's not A, it's not B, it's not C, it's a combination of D and F. I mean, how do you know what the factors are? All you can say is this is what we see in our research, and this is what the science tells us. And, you know, it's not like you're out to cut the throat of a recreational or a commercial angler. You're just there to manage and sustain the species. And that's you know, and Sorry, that's what it is. It's hard to change the science.
You have to trust in the survey work.
Right.
People complain about the surveys and that they're not surveying in the right places in the right areas.
Right.
It's managing fish in the ocean is a pretty challenging thing. You can't see them. You have to rely on the survey design and the science that goes into it.
Right.
And I'll tell you, I'll be honest with you, Alan. Science is coming under a lot of scrutiny recently, and the credibility of fisheries managers is a little bit at risk because of changes that happen as a result of updated science. And people are getting a little tired of, hearing that something is, on the verge of collapse, and then 2 years later, new science and new information comes together and things look fantastic. And we have these, what I refer to them as these knee-jerk reactions, where we have to cut back on a species like we will with flounder around 30. It's almost going to be, it's close to 30% next year.
So tell me in numbers, what does that mean as far as bag limit and creel limit and size?
Well, that hasn't been determined yet.
Okay. I mean, this is new stuff. This is new stuff. This is this week. This is not something that happened a year ago. This is what happened this week, right?
No, this information is new.
Yeah.
It just came out this summer.
Right.
We are meeting. The Mid-Atlantic Council and the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission are meeting jointly next week in New York City.
The Mid-Atlantic Council fact sheet just came out on August 5th, which is this week. So
yeah, it was just this week, so I sent that to you.
Yep.
And that's available at the council's website.
Sure. Give us a minute here to take a break.
AMFC.org, I believe it is.
All right.
People want to read about it.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. And I'll offer any of that to folks that want it. Just email me, ellis@ellisoutdoors.com, and I'll send them the link or send them the document. But hang in there a minute, Mike. This is break time for us. So just hang in there a second, and we'll be right back to you.
Okay.
Hey, you know what? Feed your dog what dogs used to feed themselves. That's right. Merrick Backcountry, the ancestral diet with grain-free, high-protein kibble and chunks of real freeze-dried raw meat. Backcountry is made in the USA for dogs who love exploring it. Merrick Backcountry, they love the wild as much as you do. You know what? It's time to tell you about the Maryland Fishing Challenge. The Maryland Fishing Challenge is a free contest sponsored by the Maryland Fisheries Service. And you know what? There's a lot of money at stake this time. That's right, $25,000, and all you got to do is fish to win. There's 67 species in Maryland, from Garrett County to Ocean City. You can win cash and prizes for fishing in your favorite Maryland spot. $25,000 in guaranteed cash prizes, including $6,000 up for grab in each of the three regions, tidal, non-tidal, and on the Atlantic coast. That's right. That's 18,000 right there. 6,000 for each of the three regions. Then if you become a master angler, let's say you go to vacation in Ocean City and you catch an angler award fish down there of some kind, you're fishing the bay and you catch an angler award size fish in the bay and you like to fish freshwater, you go out to Deep Creek and you catch something out there, that gives you a master angler certification. You catch an award size fish in each region, you're automatically entered to win $2,000 in cash. And then coming up at the grand finale on September 13th at Sandy Point, there's going to be $5,000 in random cash drawings at the Maryland Fishing Challenge finale event, and that's for all the people who have received angler awards. If you want more information, hit the website, dnr.maryland.gov/fisheries. Now is not the time to stay indoors. Go fish. Anyone can win.
This is Alan Ellis for Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, spray-on bedliners. Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie are proud to provide outstanding customer service, just like their number one rated Linex spray-on bedliners, with a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex spray-on bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. It has a durable non-slip surface, is impervious to fuels and harsh chemicals, deer, blood, crab juice, and it protects against impact and abrasion from tree stands, tools, and all the other junk you carry in your truck bed. It's easy to clean at your local car wash, too. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex spray-on bedliner. liner from Catonsville Linex or Bay Linex of Glen Burnie. Catonsville Linex is located at 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie's new location is 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199.
Hey, Clyde Sports Shop is your crabbing headquarters, that's for sure. They've got all types of crab traps. They've got collapsible crab traps. They've got stackable crab traps. They've got crab traps without roofs. They've got trot lines in every size. Everything and anything for crabbing. They've got all the crab bait, the salted eel, the chicken necks, and, you know, sometimes they even have razor clams. You just got to call and find out if they've got that. They've got new baskets and lids. They've got crab measures and tongs and gloves and crab mallets. They've got the crab steamers. They've got the crab seasoning, commercial crab pots, crab hotels, crab baskets with lids, which I did mention, cloth and wire crab nets. You get the idea. Clyde Sports Shop, open 7 days a week, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway Exit 9. That's Clyde Sports Shop. And don't forget, they have that 24-hour fishing hotline. That phone number is 410-247-3474, 247-FISH for the fishing hotline. You want to call them up, get some prices, check it out, 410-242-6108, 242-6108, www.clydesports.com.
If you're a working man and your truck breaks down, you only need to know one repair shop, W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg. They built your reputation on getting you in, fixed, and out the door quickly, efficiently, and at a very competitive price. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles, large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Just look for that big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410, W&W Tire and Auto.
Start your day with Sean and Frank, Maryland's wake-up call. Weekdays 5 to 9 a.m. on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Yes, some folks say I'm a simple kind of man. I love the outdoors, eat my beans from a can. I like hunting, fishing, don't care what the tree huggers say. I learned more about life sitting out in the woods or on the banks of a river when the fishing's no good. And if I go home skunk, well, hell, I still had a good day. Because if I can't go hunting, I'll go fishing. If I can't go fishing, I'll be wishing that I find something fun to do before I call it a day. Yeah, give me my gun, a fishing pole. You might find me down at the fishing hole. I put the line in the water, watch the bobber go floating away.
All right, put the line in water, watch that bobber go floating away. We're with Mike Luisi here, who's with the Maryland Department of Natural Resources Fishery Service, and we were talking about summer flounder and some of the changes that are going to be determined here this next week. Correct, Mike?
Well, yeah,
well the discussion's going to take place.
There are a number of meetings over the next four months that will lead to decisions that will be made about how Maryland will react. This next meeting next week in New York will be the meeting where the Mid-Atlantic Council and the Commission will set the quota for flounder for the next 3 years. And those quotas will be reduced. The science has come out and said we need to reduce what we take. So it's expected that we'll be recommending quotas set by the federal government, which it'll be likely probably about 30% less than what we have now. And then, we'll start to talk about how we're going to react as a state and a region, because right now we're in regional management with flounder with Virginia and Delaware. We all have the same rules.
Right. What is the flounder size limit right now and also the creel limit?
I think 16 inches, four fish.
Okay.
Creel, and it's an open season all year round. So
you're looking at closing the season for a certain period of time. You're looking at reducing the bag limit and increasing the size limit, which we've lived through before.
Yeah, you know, those are the three different pieces that those are the tools that managers have. There's three of them, and we're going to have to figure out what combination of tools. I in my opinion, I think a combination of everything is probably going to be best.
Right.
We might want to condense the season to the time of the year when the fishery is most active.
Right.
We may want to drop the bag limit down to 3 fish.
Right.
And it's probably going to be at least an inch, maybe a little more of an increase in size.
Right.
And it's challenging because as you increase in size, as everyone that's fishing on the bay right now realizes with the striped bass fishery that we went up 2 inches this year.
Right.
There are a lot more throwbacks. There's a lot more catch and release. And with catch and release, there's mortality associated.
Well, we just had a caller about that, talking about all the chumming that's going on above the Bay Bridge. And,
right.
You know, 14, 15-inch fish are getting thrown back. And this guy was out the other evening, and, he saw fish floating. And he said, I don't like to see that. And, we had a conversation about circle hooks and conservation and that type of thing. And, and the recreational anglers aren't. They're interested in catching fish. They're not interested in the science. They're not interested in how many fish there are for the future. Unfortunately, we can be our own worst enemy at times when we don't think about things like that. We just go out there and yank them and crank them. And, this one's gut hooked and it's too small. Rip the hook out and flop it back overboard. The fish swims away. And, 20 minutes later, it's on the surface down, the tide carrying it out. So it's just...
The catch and release mortality is one of the, especially with flounder,
right.
is a huge issue. We estimate what dies when it's thrown back, and it's part of the assessment process.
Right.
But I think new information is coming out to we can use that. I think hook and release or catch and release mortality is probably higher than what we think.
Okay.
And a species like flounder, that's a very voracious predator. A lot of people are fishing with bait.
Yes.
They're fishing with live minnows and other those.
Yep.
They're going to get hooked in the not just in their mouth, but somewhere else in their anatomy. And
right.
It's detrimental to them. So.
Well, blow the dust off of Rudy Lukakovich and send him down to Ocean City on vacation to do a mortality study on catch and release flounder. I'm sure Rudy would enjoy that assignment.
Absolutely.
So, and I know he listens. Hey, good morning, Rudy. So, anyway, We got the bad news right now that next year things are going to change on the flounder front. Right now we're 16-4 next year. Who knows? 17, 17.5, 3 fish, and you may cut back the season. Flounder spawn in the spring as well as like striped bass, correct?
No. I think flounder are a fall. I think they spawn in the fall. The flounder spawn off the continental shelf. So
okay.
They're spawning in waters way, way, way out there in the ocean.
Okay.
And their larvae with currents and tides,
right.
The larvae come back into our coastal bays along the Atlantic coast.
Well, I mean, I know the Virginia flounder fishery is, off the Virginia eastern shore. Guys just can't wait to get there in March, mid to late March to catch the big fish. And I don't know. I thought that was probably a spawning run, but I don't know.
No, I shouldn't probably say too much about that because I just don't.
Okay.
I'm not 100%.
I got it.
I do know that the spawning occurs offshore. The larvae come with it. They come back into our bays, and then they reside there until they're large enough to get back out in the ocean.
Right.
And we did see, we talked earlier about the recruitment and that we've had we've had 3 or 4 years of very poor spawning success.
Right.
However, in 2014, we did have a good year as far as recruitment. So.
Right. But I think
looking ahead, while we're taking some cuts, well, we're going to have to take some cuts this year.
Yeah.
And we'll be working very, closely with our anglers in Ocean City and
sure.
in the Bay, over the coming months, public meetings. We have those 3 tools. I'm not sure quite yet how it's all going to fall out, but, we'll be keeping a close eye on this and
sure.
working with our stakeholders to make a fishery that, or put forth a fishery that is going to work for everyone. But we did have a good year class in 14. We'll see the impacts of that in a couple of years. So, you know, what I'm thinking is we're going to see this cut back, but we're also going to then be looking at liberalizing a bit over the coming years.
Yep.
As that population, as that recruit, as that year class kind of grows.
Well, sure, but I mean, you have 4 years of bad spawning. That doesn't portend well for the future.
Not a good thing.
No. Nope. So we got, you know, that's why you guys are doing what you do. That's why you have these discussions and, you know, a lot of moving pieces, that's for sure. So hang on there, Mike. We're going to come back and talk about sharks. But right now I got to tell you folks about Merrick Backcountry, the ancestral diet that dogs, your dog, will go wild for, with a mix of exotic proteins and chunks of real freeze-dried raw meat. Our grain-free recipes made in the USA offer the best nutrition for the dog whose appetite was never domesticated. Merrick Backcountry. They love the wild as much as you do. That's right, they do. Let me tell you one more time about the folks at Clyde Sports Shop. If you're going fishing or crabbing this year, or even if you're looking for a firearm, Clyde Sports Shop is your all-around outdoor store. That's for sure. They've got everything for crabbing, all the pots, all the nets, all the trot line. They've got everything for fishing, all the bait, the rods, the reels, the rod and reel repair. They've got line that they can spool on your spool. They've got trolling lures. They've got the best baits and the best suggestions for where to go. They've got everything you need for firearms, for home protection, for self-protection, for hunting, for muzzleloaders, for shotguns, for rifles, for handguns, all the ammunition. If you're a reloader, they've even got shot for reloading your shotgun shells, 7.5, 8, and 9. They were out of it for a while, but now they've got it back. So if you're involved in the shooting sports and you like to reload your own, well, they've got it. So you go get it. That's Clyde Sports Shop. They're located at 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne. Here's the contact phone number, 410-242-6108. That's 410-242-6108. If you're just a fisherman, you want to hear the 24-hour fishing report, crabbing report, you can give them a call at 410-247-3474. And, of course, if you're online a lot like I am, go to the website, ClydeSports.com, and you'll be glad you did.
Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. With 10 locations in Central Maryland, there's a Battery Warehouse convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Cockeysville, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville, and Woodlawn. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse near you.
Hey, you know what? The Maryland Fishing Challenge is a free year-round tournament hosted by Maryland Department of Natural Resources Fisheries Service for every recreational angler in Maryland. Eligible fish include all game fish from the Atlantic Ocean to the Chesapeake and west to the mountain streams and Deep Creek Lake. 67 species in, I say, 3 categories. Sometimes it's 5 categories, but there's a category for everything. Right now it's freshwater, the Chesapeake Bay and the Atlantic Coast. There's catch and release and even invasive species if you want to include catch and release in the invasive of species as categories. There's also a youth division connected to the free online Maryland Youth Fishing Club. You catch a fish of a notable specified size, you catch a big fish, an award-sized fish, you receive your official angler award certificate and an invitation to the grand finale in September, where you could win a Tracker Marine boat package, an exotic fishing vacation from the World Fishing Network, Costa gear, tackle packages from Bass Pro Shop and Bill's Outdoor Center, and a collectible Under Armour t-shirt, Heat Gear t-shirt, and even to share your share of $25,000 in cash prizes. The fish are biting right now all over the place. Freshwater, tidal rivers, and Chesapeake Bay, they're biting on the ocean right now. Why not go fishing? That's the idea about the whole fishing challenge, to get you out there to enjoy the great outdoors. Now's not the time to stay inside. Go Fish. And the official rules are online at dnr.maryland.gov/fisheries, the Maryland Fishing Challenge.
Hey, for great fishing tackle, crabbing supplies, and up-to-date fishing and crabbing information, head to Fishbones Bait and Tackle in Pasadena. To get there, take Route 100 to the end. Hop on Mountain Road towards Gibson Island. Go 2.5 miles to 4729 Mountain Road. All you need for any type of fishing, crabbing, and the best fishing report on the Mid-Bay. Fishbones also carries the best stainless steel crab steamers you'll ever find. Call 410-360-0573, 410-360-0573 for Fishbones Bait and Tackle, Pasadena.
Stay connected. Listen on AM 680 or stream us on your PC, tablet, or phone at WCBM.com.
New frequency detected.
How high is the water, Mama? 2 feet high and rising. How high is the water, Papa? She said it's 2 feet high and rising. But we can make it to the road in a homemade boat, cause that's the only thing we got left to float. It's already over all the wheat and oats. 2 feet high and rising. How high is the water, Mama? 3 feet high and rising. How high is the water, Papa? She said it's 3 feet high and rising.
All right, we're with Mike Luisi, and we got a caller on the line. Let's talk to Dale in Easton. Good morning, Dale.
Good morning, Alan. How are you? Big
Good.
Mike, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Is this Dale Weirich?
Yep.
Alan, give kudos to Mike. He makes a mean barbecue chicken.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, indeed. Excellent. Mike, listen to your discussion. It's interesting because people don't realize that basically they're two factors involved with managing these species. One, you can control effort and size limits and things like that, but the biotic factors in terms of the environment, you have absolutely no control over that. And the fact that you can have a lot of big fish, and people don't understand that you can have a lot of fish, but the spawning success may not be as good as you would think because of the biotic factors.
Right.
You can have large year classes produced by a very few spawners if the environmental conditions are right. And
That's
it doesn't
correct.
Take a whole lot, because we've seen it with striped bass over the years. You can have a lot of spawners and have relatively poor year classes, but if the conditions are right, that's when you have the dominant year classes. So a lot of the criticism that you all get, I think, is really unwarranted, because people don't understand that it's not just the there are a lot of factors involved with how you manage these species.
Right, and I think another challenge that people face when they're with fisheries management is that what the fish that they're fishing on now, there's a lot of them, and they're catching a lot.
Yes.
They're catching a lot of fish, and they don't understand why we would have to reduce, and it's because of the future. This fisheries management science looks into the future as to what we expect to be here.
Well, the big
in
fish
years to come, and
the big fish that
that's a challenge with the stakeholders is to engage with them and have get them to understand that our job is to make sure that there will be fish around for a long time and a sustainable future.
The fish that they're catching now that are bigger than 16 inches didn't get to be that size overnight. They weren't spawned and popped out, and here they are 16 inches. It took years for those fish to get to a catchable size, and they've got
right.
to figure out that, if it took 4 years to get to that size, or 3 years, or whatever the growth rate is, they got to figure out that if the spawning success wasn't there 3 years ago, 4 years ago, 2 years from now, there's not going to be that number of big fish, because as we continue to catch those fish over the size limit, they're going to be reducing the numbers. And then behind them, the juvenile fish are not to that size yet. So, it's pretty simple. I want to move on to the shark situation. We hear a lot about the, thank you, Dale. Anything else, buddy?
No, that's all.
Okay,
that's
buddy.
All.
Thanks.
Yeah,
you,
thanks, Dale. Good talking to you.
All right. Yep.
Thanks for the chicken. Thanks for the shout out on the chicken.
On the chicken. Good for you. Yeah, Dale's a regular listener, too, good friend.
Yeah,
I get
Dale and I have worked together a long time.
I get to fish with Dale from time to time. All right, in the short remaining time we have left here, we've got a lot of shark attacks that have been in the news this year. I think there have been 8 or 9 in North Carolina, South Carolina alone. What's the deal with the sharks?
Well, you know, people ask me all the time, and this summer was a little crazy with the phone calls and the emails of all my friends and, you know, neighbors, and people asking me what should we do when we go to the beach this year? Should we go in the water? And what I tell people and what I've told people for years is that sharks, when you enter into the ocean, no matter where you are, you're entering into the habitat where sharks live. And they've been there, they're always there. There are sharks off the beaches. It's just part of their habitat. It's part of where they live. It's where their food is, and they're always going to be around. This year, in particular, it seemed like over the course of a month and a half or so, there were just so many current instances of people interacting with sharks. And I hate to use the term shark attack.
Right.
I think it's more of an interaction of with the shark. You're in the water, you're having a great time, you're swimming, and then you either bumped by one, a shark, or I don't truly believe that a shark is actually attacking a person. I think they're being sharks.
Yeah, they're reactive to what's in their environment.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, well, you know, we did have a shark bite last year, and people didn't know it. I mean, it was reported, but it was in Chincoteague Bay. People didn't hear much about it. There was nobody lost a limb or anything like that. So,
it was just a
shark bite. But as you talked about, people on the Southern Ocean City, Assateague, and all those places actively fish for sharks. And there's a photo on the website, on Ellis Outdoors website right now of my daughter who passed away a little while ago. And we were inshore shark fishing with Mark Sampson, and I know you know Mark, a couple of years ago. And I think we caught 12 or 13 sharks, and some of them were pretty sizable. And you know, we're looking at all the condos and everything. We're looking at the boardwalk, the whole deal. I mean, we're inshore shark fishing with big chunks of tuna on the balloon, or just free lining, or on floats or whatever. And it's incredible the amount of sharks that are in the water there, in the coastal area off Ocean City. And it's not Jaws. It's not a 20-foot great white shark. There's duskies and sand tigers and, you know, hammerheads and everything else out there.
Yeah.
So, but
yeah, I was in North Carolina this summer with my family, and we went out to the beach to take the dog out to run a little bit, and the kids were running up and down it was probably 7 o'clock at night, but there were a few people swimming out there. And, you know, I've told my kids, you know, there are certain kind of rules you can follow to kind of help you not engage with the sharks. There's a guy that pulled in it was probably a six foot long black tip that was right there, right? He caught it 10 feet off the beach, right where the waves were crashing, and, you know, 100 yards away from where these people were swimming.
Yeah, no doubt.
You know, I helped them get it in and get the hook out, and we set it back into the water. But
sure,
I was like I was the local hero for a few minutes, because nobody knew what to do or how to deal with it. But yeah, they were actively fishing for sharks, and you know, it's just one of those things. You have to be careful when you go, just avoid swimming in certain times of the day, and try to stay away from fishermen. Anything on your body that's shiny or could be considered as kind of a lure, you know.
Oh, good point.
There's caution.
Like wearing an ankle bracelet or a bracelet or a necklace or something like that could attract attention of a shark. I never even thought of that.
Yeah, it's just, you know, you just need to be thinking about it a little bit when you go in the ocean. Right. From a swimming pool.
Yep. Hold on there. We're going to take a final little break here, and we'll be right back and conclude. We'll talk about the avoiding sharks here if you're, you know, if you're vacationing Ocean City or anywhere on the beach, Virginia Beach. I mean, there's a lot of sharks along the coast, and people just don't understand how many there are. And it's not just, you know, like I said, the great whites. There's lots of different species. Hey, Merrick Backcountry, for dogs whose taste buds are still wild. We add chunks of real freeze-dried raw meat to grain-free high-protein kibble, made in the USA with no ingredients from China. Merrick Backcountry is the ancestral diet preferred by dogs who prefer the outdoors. Merrick Backcountry. They love the wild as much as you do. This is Alan Ellis for Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex Spray-On Bedliners. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex are proud to provide outstanding customer service, just like their number one rated Linex Spray-On Bedliners with the nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex Spray-On Bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. It has a durable non-slip surface, is impervious to fuels and harsh chemicals, deer blood, crab juice, and it protects against impact and abrasion from tree stands and tools and all the other junk you carry in your truck bed. It's easy to clean at your local car wash, too. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex Spray-On Bedliner from Bay Linex of Glen Burnie or Catonsville Linex. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie. New location, 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. And Catonsville Linex is located at 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800.
W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg has taken care of my trucks for over 25 years. Anything from a simple oil change to extensive engine work, brakes, tune-ups, everything, their motto is, we do it. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles. Large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Look for the big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410, W&W Tire and Auto.
Hear this week's top newsmakers and a panel of expert political analysis on Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace, Sundays at 5 p.m. on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Mike Lisi, how are you?
Doing great.
Good.
Funky's finally setting in here.
Good. Glad to hear it. All right. Finally, right at the end of the show here.
Yeah.
All right. So, real quick, along the East Coast, and I think this one might have been brought out in some of the news reports. We've got. This year, in particular, we've got higher water temperatures, warmer water temperatures, high salinity, and we've got sea turtles hatching. And you know, we hear about that in the southern, more south of us, but it's the entire East Coast, from basically New Jersey to Virginia, from what I'm reading here, is the pupping season for hammerheads, for bull sharks, for spinners, for black tips, for tigers, right. For, you know, nurse sharks, silky sharks, lemon sharks, dusky sharks use the area outside the Barrier Islands as pupping and nursery ground. I mean, we've got a lot of sharks in the water here because it's the pupping season. They're giving birth. They're eating up the sea turtles and anything else they can find. And people are invading there, as you said, you know, people are going in their house at a very sensitive time of the year.
That's right.
Okay. So, and as far as suggestions, let me ask you this question. Are the shark numbers increasing? I mean, we hear a lot of alarmist groups out there want to save the sharks and all that type of thing. But our shark population is pretty robust right now, isn't it?
It is. And I think the science is a little bit behind. It's behind what people are seeing.
Yeah.
At the most, I was just in Alexandria last week at the ASM Atlantic States Commission meeting, and one of the managers from North Carolina was talking about sharks, and what he was saying is that, you know, the science is still saying that sharks populations, well, and there are so many different species of sharks, it's hard to categorize them all as one, but certain, they're seeing more and more and more sharks each year. The science is still saying that in some cases there's trouble, you know, they're in trouble, but I think what we're seeing along the coast through the protection that we've provided for sharks, you know, over the last decade and or more, that we're seeing more, they're becoming more robust, they're resilient animals, and they're expanding in their range. The populations are getting stronger as far as size. So I believe that there are more, you know, we're seeing a healthier population of sharks in the ocean.
Right.
It's many different species, and it's part of this. And the more that we'll see, they need food. They need, you know, they're going to be moving inshore to pup, you know, in the spring and summer,
right,
time of the year. And it's, you know, we just need to be careful.
Just be careful. That's the main thing.
They need to think about it a little bit.
Yeah, be aware. Don't wear jewelry. Don't wear things that are going to attract sharks to you.
Right.
Don't do anything that would imitate a hatchling baby turtle. Or
right. And if somebody's got a big fishing pole with a giant piece of, you know, with a half of a bluefish on it, and they're throwing it out into the water, just don't swim near it.
Yeah, don't swim there. Good point. Pay a little bit of attention to the environment.
Right, right.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that I never thought of that, but that's exactly right. You know, if you got somebody out surf fishing with that's fishing for sharks and they're trying to attract them, it's probably not a good place to
not the best
place to hang out. That's pretty funny. Exactly. So, well, like I tell you, it's been fun. We did get an email from a listener that said they're glad we played the theme from Jaws.
Yeah.
Because now people will know if they hear that music playing on the beach that there's a shark coming.
Yeah.
So,
and, you know, people don't need, I don't want to make it seem as if people should be fearful to go in the ocean. That people just need to take the extra, they just need to think about it, take the, you know, the dawn and dusk are tough times. You probably shouldn't be in there. Try to stay away from people fishing shiny objects on your arms or your wrists.
Good point.
Those are the precautions to take. But, you know, certainly everyone should still feel comfortable in enjoying the beach. And shark interactions are very, very rare.
Yeah.
As far as how many people are in the ocean at any given time in the summer, the fact that only a few people were interacted with this year is, you know, still very rare occurrence.
Very good. Mike, a lot of good information today on some of the offshore and inshore fisheries, the coastal fisheries with the flounder and the sharks, and we appreciate you being here today. If you want, you know, we don't have much time left. Is there a specific website people can go to see any or all this stuff? Is there a coastal fisheries website on the...